Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast. I'm Jake, and I'll be hosting this episode. Before I tell you exactly what the theme is, I think we should just start with the question of the week, and you'll probably guess what's going on for this episode. Here's Kaylin with our question of the week.
Hi, this is Kaylin, and this week the question I asked was...
So if your name was Patrick, would you rather go by Pat or Rick?
Rick.
Any particular reason for that?
I just like it better. Pat is kind of gender neutral. Rick gives you that masculine.
I'm going to go with, my name's not Rick.
Love it.
It's going to go Pat, man.
I'd probably go with Pat, too.
I would prefer Pat Rick. Not a Patrick, but a Patrick. Which is funny because my last name is Patron, which people have called me Patrick just through life. I just, or Patriot, or Patriot, or Patron.
Okay.
But it's Patron, like a saint. Or maybe I was thinking about changing my name to Baseball Normalson.
If your name was Patrick, would you rather go by Pat or Rick?
Rick, for sure. And I don't like Pat. That doesn't sound good.
Pat?
Yeah, Pat?
That would be nice, yeah.
Why's that?
I don't know. It just has a nice ring to it. Pat. What's up, Pat? You know what I mean?
I don't know. Pat's kind of boring. So I guess whatever you're feeling that day, you can call me Pat or Rick, whatever works.
Would you rather go by Pat or Rick?
I think if my name were Patrick, I would probably go by Patrick and just use the entire name that I was given, just Patrick.
Yeah, any particular reason for that?
It sounds nicer. I feel like I would prefer talking to a Patrick rather than a Pat. Pat maybe seems like too friendly of a guy, and a Rick maybe seems slightly unfriendly, when Patrick, he can be whatever he wants to be.
From Real College Podcast, this is Kaylin Mangan.
Some of you maybe guessed it, and maybe some of you didn't, but our managing editor, Patrick Sharkey, is graduating. I'll be taking over his position as managing editor and host, and I'm beyond excited, but I'm definitely gonna miss Patrick. We had some of the producers tell us their best memories with Patrick, and they all had super nice things to say. I, for one, know that the podcast is not going to feel the same without Patrick. Patrick was the person who hired me on and trained me and who helped me be able to take over this job today. He is the reason that so many people felt comfortable coming to the meetings because he's such a friendly person and he really cares for his team. I know that I'm, for one, really, really going to miss Patrick. But here's the other producers telling us why they're going to miss Patrick. First, we'll be hearing from Emily Allen, then Liv Riggins, and then Alex Schumacher, who are all associate producers for the podcast and have had Patrick as their managing editor for a bit.
So one thing I've noticed in my last year with the podcast is Patrick and his patience. A really cool fact about working with the Real College Podcast is that you don't need any experience coming in, whether it be audio editing experience, reporting experience, experience working on a team, etc. So I was a pretty clean slate coming in. And while it was a really great deal for me, I can imagine that for an editor or a producer, it was a little difficult when you already have all this experience catching someone else up to speed. So I really appreciate the patience that Patrick had with me and, honestly, the patience that he's had with our entire team. I think when Patrick started out, he had a team of people who have either graduated or moved on. So really, everyone currently working with the podcast has only been around since last semester. And it's a really big deal that no one can really say they would have had this experience or their job with the podcast without acknowledging Patrick and what he's done. I also want to add that Patrick cared for his team beyond just training us in and making sure we didn't produce poor quality stories. About a month ago, I really wanted to do a story on the urban chicken phenomenon and the consequences of that. So I found this really cool nonprofit organization that takes in rescue chickens from Minneapolis. But they were pretty far away from campus, and I could not take a light rail out there. There was no bus. So out of the kindness of his heart, Patrick actually drove me there and picked me up after the interview. And he did not have to do that, But I fully am aware that if he hadn't, I probably would not have been able to report that chicken story. So not only would I like to thank him for that one experience, but I'd like to thank him for all the patience he's had with the team and how much he's really demonstrated that he cares for the show.
So I've known Patrick only a very short time. I just started working as one of the assistant producers for Real College Podcast. But in the short time I've been here, he's been really friendly, really made me feel welcome. I remember at my interview for the job, I was pretty nervous, but just like Patrick and everyone else on the staff was really welcoming and it didn't feel intimidating as interviews often can.
One thing I really appreciate about Patrick was the encouragement he's given me right from the start. After I finished my first story, which was about the sex store Sminkin, he texted me right away after I sent him in the episode and told me that he thought it was really, really good, which was exciting to hear considering that I had never done an audio story or really a news story on my own outside of a classroom setting before. To be encouraged like that hadn't been something I'd ever really experienced. It felt like such a welcoming environment right from the start. I remember the improv story. It was the first story I ever pitched on my own. And I was really, really nervous about it. And just his response, which was encouragement that he thought was a really good idea and encouraging others to build on it. So then it became a full show and it became both a story and a show that I'm really, really proud of. He helped me embrace my own potential as an audio journalist and encouraged it ever since I started at this podcast. I really appreciate him as a managing editor for the short time he's been my editor.
But beyond being just a great editor, Patrick was also a reporter for a while. He started out as a reporter, then worked his way up to producer and finally managing editor. One of the stories he's proudest of is his Timberwolves story.
This first story is, like I said, I kind of alluded to it earlier, is a story I'm most proud of. I did it for actually a class, and then I ended up airing it for the show as well. But it's just about the Minnesota Timberwolves and their sluggish attendance and how, you know, different reasons that people are not going to games. Like I said, I think I got some pretty good natural sound, and it just ended up being the most complete, full story that I think I did here with my time at the podcast. So, yeah, it's a story on the Minnesota Timberwolves and their crappy attendance.
2 years ago, thousands of Minnesota Timberwolves fans could feel their luck finally changing. Because the Timberwolves had the rights to the first overall draft pick. Karl-Anthony Towns, the highly touted center from the University of Kentucky, was to be the centerpiece to lead the team back to the playoffs for the first time since 2004, which is the longest playoff drought of any team in the NBA. But fast forward to earlier this month. It's Wednesday, it's 35 degrees and it's raining, and it's an hour before the Timberwolves tip off against the New York Knicks. But the streets outside the Target Center are eerily quiet. Traffic cops, direct cars, and a few pedestrians. And the closer you get to the arena, the more ticket scalpers you see. They're doing anything possible to sell their large swath of tickets that they keep bound by rubber bands in their back pockets. One of them physically forces two tickets into my hand, but then when he sees I have a microphone, he begins to rap.
Everything happens for a reason. I'm killing everything because I call it a killer season. I be running around.
The truth is, the Wolves have ranked dead last in average per-game attendance the last two seasons, which means barely anyone got to see Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins win Rookie of the Year in two consecutive seasons. It's widely believed across the league that the Wolves have the best young roster in the NBA. So why do the Wolves struggle so much to get fans to show up for these games?
Because of lack of loyalty and lack of patience.
If anyone knows anything about loyalty and patience, it's John Bruns, who's been a season ticket holder for the Timberwolves since their inaugural season in 1989.
People are bandwagon people. They're there for a couple, three, four games, and like this year, boy, there was pretty good crowds to begin with, and it didn't take too long that they were jumping off that bandwagon like crazy because of the lack of loyalty.
Patience and loyalty is something the Wolves front office is asking for as well. Here's Brad Ryder, Vice President of Communications for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
you know, we're very excited about the future, but the fact is that right now it's going to take them some time to develop. It has been a while since we've been to the playoffs, so I think it's going to maybe take a while for that to resonate into huge numbers attendance-wise, but we do feel the buzz in the community.
For a team that's lost considerably more games than they've won in the last 12 seasons, it's kind of hard to continue to have patience. But John says it's not a problem for him.
We're Timberwolves fans, but we're also basketball fans. And you go to an NBA game, you're going to see some good basketball.
It's true. It's the NBA. It's basketball at its finest. But a quick survey of some Timberwolves message boards will tell you that it's not just the product on the floor that's keeping fans from buying tickets. Complaints range from expensive concessions at the Target Center to uncomfortable seats to obnoxious in-arena announcers. But the single biggest issue that keeps coming up is the franchise's switch to the use of a company called Flash Seats to sell and distribute tickets to the games.
This is a much, much, much easier, more convenient way for people to attend our games. And again, you know, there's a faction of people who initially, you know, when you change anything and when you make a drastic change to anything, it's going to take a while for people to get adjusted to it. But now that we're about a year and a half in, you know, we receive very few complaints anymore. People have gotten used to it. Even the people who weren't big fans of it have been converted by and large that the system is convenient and that it'll work for them.
Flash Seats does have some appeal. All tickets are digital and are kept within an app, and it's 2016. We love our apps. Plus, it helps speed up the process of getting through security at each game. But there's a lot of downside as well. If you want to sell your tickets, it has to be done through the app. And Flash Seats adds fees on top of that, which it then splits with the Timberwolves. They also have a sale price floor, which means you can't sell your tickets for less than 75% of the value of each ticket. You can see why this is appealing for an NBA franchise. They essentially get to double dip on all ticket transactions, even tickets in the third-party market. However, John Bruns, season ticket holder since 1989, says not so fast.
It was just as convenient the old way. And we found it very difficult to sell tickets through Flash Seats because of the plus 20% that they add. And that's one of the reasons that we're not getting the attendance that we should have, I think, because it used to be you could sell tickets just about any time. Now there's a minimum that you can charge. It is affecting attendance, in my opinion.
The Wolves are averaging 13,000 tickets sold per game, which is over 1,000 less than the next team. And that's tickets sold, not the actual amount of people who are attending these games. Compare that to the Chicago Bulls, who lead the league in attendance by selling an average of 22,000 tickets per game. When watching a Timberwolves game on TV, it feels like there are a lot more empty seats than there are full. And if you go to a game in person, you can often hear the opposing team's fans cheering louder than Wolves fans. It's pretty bleak. And it'd be one thing if this roster was a dumpster fire, but the makeup of this team is a lot more like the rosters from the early 2000s. Those teams had guys like Kevin Garnett and Stephon Marbury. But the Wolves have household names on their roster now, with the likes of Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Zach LaVine. The Timberwolves of the early 2000s had no problem selling out their games. Which is to say, there are plenty of basketball fans in this state. And while not everyone will agree on the best way to sell tickets to fans, there's one tried and true solution to getting fans to show up.
Wins. It takes wins. That's the society that we live in.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Patrick Sharkey.
As managing editor, it was Patrick's job to put together the 30-minute show that aired every Monday. And while it could be a lot of fun, it could also be pretty stressful.
Yeah, the most stressful thing definitely is getting that 30-minute show done. You know, the meetings, it's like, yeah, we can pitch and we can talk about stories and all of that and, you know, what it's going to take to make a good story. But then when it comes down to actually like making sure people are getting their stuff done and putting it all together can be the stressful piece.
And yet, week after week, he did it. Real College Podcast had an episode up every Monday, whether it was new or a rerun. Along the way, he was able to create some memories that he'll take with him after he graduates.
I think one of my fondest memories is just building the team to what it is now. You know, because when I took over, it was a team of, you know, three people. Pretty much. So building that to what we have now, where we've got, you know, five different producers and then a bunch more different volunteers. People are really interested in the show, not only the people who are making it, but people are actually like tuning in and starting to kind of follow the shows that we make. So I'm really proud of that. And I think, you know, the show's come a really long way. So I'm happy that I was part of that.
And Patrick's not one to brag, but he was a perfect fit for this job. He's been interested in journalism for a while, and he even ran his own podcast in high school, which leads perfectly into his next story.
Yeah, so this next story is about podcasting. It was one of the first stories that I did, and it was cool because I got to interview John Moe, who's kind of a really big inspiration for me and someone who's pretty big in the public radio scene. And he lives right here in the Twin Cities. So I got to talk to him about some of the different podcasts that he does and, you know, what it takes to make a good podcast, which was cool. And it was pretty informative because, it kind of got to inform how I approached the show for the next year as well. So, so this is a story on podcasting. I was really proud of the production value for this as well. I threw some fun music in here, which is kind of fun. And then I also talked to some other guys who own a podcast network around here. Just kind of look at the business of podcasting. So, here's that story now.
I've never really listened to a whole lot of radio. My first car in high school was a sexy champagne-colored Honda CR-V. It was 2006, and I'd insisted on immediately installing a third-party deck on my dash, one that had an auxiliary input which would allow me to plug in my iPod so I could play my Sad Guy collection of Taking Back Sunday and Jimmy Eat World, among other Sad Guy tunes. But I did occasionally yearn for something other than the melancholy. At some point, I came across this thing called a podcast, and I downloaded an episode of the most popular podcast in iTunes. It was called This American Life, which was for a long time, and probably still is, the gateway drug for most podcast listeners. Podcasts have been the main source of entertainment in my car ever since. But before we go any further, I'd like to give you a brief history on podcasting. First of all, what is it? Well, you're listening to one right now. That's right. In case you're unaware, The Real College Podcast is, in fact, a podcast. And it's available in iTunes and any other podcatching software that you choose. Okay, so podcasting in some form has been around since the 1980s, yet the term podcasting itself wasn't used until the early 2000s, and most folks really had no idea how to access them. But in 2004, Apple included a podcast directory built directly within iTunes, which helped launch a new wave of podcast consumers and creators. And while the format of podcasting stayed relatively in the background for many years, last year there was a breakthrough. And that breakthrough came in the form of a hit podcast named Serial. And the numbers behind Serial are really encouraging. As of December 23rd, 2014, episodes of Serial had been downloaded 40 million times. And according to Apple, Serial was the fastest podcast ever to reach 5 million downloads. Okay, so now you're up to speed. Podcast creators say that the appeal of podcasting is that it allows its creators the ability to make a show about anything they want. People can make a show about their hobbies and interests, and assuming it's well-made, it's interesting and well-researched, there's more than likely an audience that will find it. John Moe, who's a producer, writer, and host of many great and popular podcasts, just recently started the second season of his podcast, Conversation Parade. It's a podcast centered around the hit animated show from Cartoon Network called Adventure Time.
Who wants to play video games?
BMO! What's on the menu, BMO?
I've created a new game called Conversation Parade.
You know, I floated it to my boss at the time as an idea for something to try that was intentionally narrow. You know, I think there's a lot of shows out there that want to be pretty broad. And I said, well, what if we just go the other way? What if we delight the portion of the audience? And there's, you know, tens of millions of people watching this show, so it's not all that small of an audience. What if we just try to make the best show possible for just this group of people?
podcasting provides the ability to create a niche show and still attract a passionate listener base. John says that this provides many advantages over podcasting's terrestrial counterpart.
That's a convenience that you have, an opportunity you have in podcasting that you don't have in broadcasting. You know, if you're doing a radio show, you need to appeal to the person sort of spinning by on the radio dial. And if they land on you, you've got, 10 seconds to grab their attention and keep them. Whereas with a podcast, they've chosen to download what you have. And so you're already at a great advantage.
But if podcasting is the future of audio broadcast, there has to be a business behind the freedom to produce what you want. There's still a need to make a living, right? So I talk with Sean Bernard and Scott O'Malley, the founders of the Alive and Social Podcast Network based here in Minneapolis, and they explain that, much like traditional radio, podcasting relies on the use of advertising to help make a profit. However, they feel they're less restricted in the type of advertising that they're allowed to engage in.
The average radio talk radio station plays between 18 and 24 different ad units in an hour. We max ours out at 8. And we really don't consider our advertisers as outsiders. It's kind of like a small town mm-hmm. would treat an advertiser, that they're part of the community. They're part of what we do. They sponsor and support what we do. So in some ways, like, you know, maybe The Current or NPR would treat something, but we're allowed to endorse. They're not allowed to endorse these clients. And we really try to look at endorsement situations as much as we can.
While advertising appears to be the main source of income for many podcasts, podcasting is still a very new market. This has led some producers to explore other potential ways to help pay for production. Here's John Moe.
I think there's something to be said, too, for direct audience fundraising. So if you listen to this, help pay for it. And in my experience, people are eager to do that. And I think that's where you get a real advantage with a narrow podcast, where, you know, a lot of the people who are listening to Conversation Parade are passionate about Adventure Time, and they've become passionate about Conversation Parade. And so if you get people who are passionate about the thing you're doing, you know, they'll spend money. I think there's potential in that direct fundraising model as well as the advertising model. I mean, I want to say we're making it up as we go along, but we're all experimenting as we go along.
The podcast medium continues to grow, and the podcast community, both creators and consumers, are working to figure out the best possible way to make it all happen. And here at the Real College Podcast, I think we're just happy to be a small part of it. So, you know, help us out. Subscribe to us on iTunes and tell your friends. For Radio K and the Real College Podcast, I'm Patrick Sharkey.
And the butterflies and bees, we can wander through the forest and do so as we please.
So that's that. Patrick Simon's managing editor comes to a close. But before he left, I asked him if he had any last messages for the podcast, some wisdom to leave us with.
Keep doing what you're doing. I think this is a really, really strong team. I think there's a really wide range of interests and skill level and different abilities. So I think you've got a really good team around you. And obviously they have a great leader now as well. Do stories, not because you feel pressure to do a story because you want to tell a story about something that you're interested in.
That's it for this week's episode. Obviously, a very special thank you to Patrick Sharkey. You have been an amazing managing editor and host, and we're going to miss you so much. I hope I do as good of a job as you did. Real College Podcast is produced by Liv Riggins, Emily Allen, Alex Schumacher, and Jacob Kowalczak. Managing editor and host is me, Jacob Maldonado Medina. Real College Podcast comes out every Monday at 6:30. You can hear it on Radio K, or you can go to our website, radiok.org/realcollegepodcast. You can also subscribe on iTunes, leave a comment, let us know how we're doing, let us know if there's anything you want us to report on that we're not currently. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in next week for another episode of Real College Podcast.